My name is Lou Levine. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Language and Cognition, and I've been teaching here at OSTO since the spring of 1977, so I guess that makes it 40 years of my life. I came here as a young kid. I was 27 years old. And I think OSTOS was my first actual teaching job. I had been in a master's program, a teacher training program at Teachers College, Columbia University, and I was working with the youth. I was working with children in a local elementary school in Harlem, where I earned my master's. And then that was the late 70s. I guess I graduated in 76, and the city was in bankruptcy. There were no jobs available. It was impossible to find a job. But I had a friend who was in that program with me, and he, in the fall of 76, got a teaching position here. And so when the spring semester came around, there was an opening. Somebody was assigned to teach a class and walked out in the second week, and they were desperate to find somebody. My friend recommended me, and I showed up, and I've been here ever since. That first class was probably one of the most challenging teaching experiences I ever had. I walked into a class with 42 students. This was an ESL reading class that met twice a week. The college at that time had no bookstore, and the book that had been ordered for the class was not available. Barnes & Noble didn't have it. They had it on order. It was going to take 2 weeks, and I was desperate. And I remember taking a bus out somewhere to a warehouse in New Jersey and buying the copies of the books for the students so we'd have something to work with. And, you know, I sold the books to the students at cost. And that's how it all began for me. I think I saw that I had a special talent because the students came the entire semester. And I remember counting at the final exam, 38 of the 42 students took the final exam. And what was challenging about it, back in those days, they did a very poor job of evaluating and placing students. So I had a lower level ESL class, and the range of abilities ran the whole gamut. I mean, there were some students who had just gotten here and didn't know a word of English, and then there were students who had been here since childhood and were totally fluent in English. So how to keep all those students engaged for an entire semester, I don't know how I did it, but I did. And I saw quickly that, you know, I had a connection with these students. I didn't plan to work with this student population, but I loved it, and students seemed to respond to me. And I'll also say at that time, OSTOS was growing. It was probably the only school in CUNY that was offering full-time lines because the student population was increasing at a pretty high rate, certainly relative to other schools. So there was always the possibility that I might be able to get a full-time job, which was what I was interested in doing because I saw I was teaching in several places after my first year out of school. And so I understood what it was like to be an adjunct. It's not an easy thing. You're running here, you're running there, and you don't really feel quite part of anything. You don't, you know, things are much better, but back in those days, you didn't have a place to leave your books or hang your hat. I started working with ESL students, that's what I've done for the most part all my years here. And it's been one of the most gratifying experiences I've had in my life. I mean, it's given me a lot of satisfaction and brought meaning. I've had the opportunity to work with so many incredible students. I admire them so much. because I know what it is to learn a second language as an adult. I've tried to learn French and Spanish as an adult, and I know the effort involved, the sacrifices you have to make, the perseverance required, and I know the hard lives our students have. You know, back in the early days, when I was so young, a lot of the students invited me to their homes, to parties, to celebrate different occasions. So I really got a sense of, you know, how our students live, where they came from. And I just find it remarkable that they're able to achieve so much given the challenges that they face. And for me, that's the beauty of it. I love seeing these students strive to change their lives. And for me to contribute in some small way to helping them. And I think I meet students at the beginning of their educational journey. So they're very, for the most part, open and willing. And they're very trusting. And so it's easy to, it's not hard to motivate them, but the challenge is holding them accountable. A lot of them don't have the time to do their work. A lot of them have difficulty doing the work. But it's participating in that process of trying to help people get the most out of themselves that I really enjoy. I see my role sort of as a coach. You know, I played a lot of sports in my youth, and you know, I think a good teacher is a coach, somebody who tries to get the most out of people. In fact, the word educate comes from the Latin educare, which means to draw out. And I think that's how I see my job. I'm not trying to put in information into students' heads, but I'm trying to get the best and the most out of students and help them see their potential and help them realize it by giving them challenging, interesting material. I mean, I think that's one of the things I've done best here over the years is teach interesting subject matter that's relevant to them, but it also expands their horizons. And I'd say, beginning in 1982, I started to work as a teacher in a ESL intensive program, which was an accelerated course of study. So I got to work with a lot of the better prepared ESL students we have and some of the most motivated. And that's really been a joy here. I became the coordinator of this program in 1989. And this is my last semester doing it. I'm stepping down at the end of the semester to take on another responsibility. But that has been the most wonderful thing about being here, because not only it's working with the students, but I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of terrific colleagues. And together we've helped create this program and the rich curriculum. And it also involves taking the students beyond the classroom. We take trips, we go to different cultural institutions, all as part of the learning experience, you know, connecting the outside world to what they're learning in the classroom. And that, for me, that's what's been very special, to work with students who want to change their lives. They most of them come with a real sense of urgency. They're not here to play, and they want to learn, and you know, so that's a gift to a teacher, and then to be part of that and to do this with other faculty colleagues has been the core of my life, quite frankly, because not only did I get to work with a lot of great students and dedicated teachers, but I also met my wife here. She came here at the very same time I did, but we didn't know each other. She taught in the humanities department, but then in 1980 she was hired in the English department, where I also was at the time, and we were friends and colleagues and later got married. And then in 1990 we adopted a son from Peru. And as it turns out, our son graduated from Hostos. And this institution helped him tremendously. My son barely finished high school. He had a lot of issues. And, you know, he never took an SAT exam. He went to summer school every summer. He barely graduated. He didn't apply to college. And when it came time that summer after he finally finished, where was he going to go? What was he going to do? We encouraged him to come here. And as it turned out, this place really turned him around. Slowly. And, you know, now he's in a master's program. Not only that, but he works here at Hostos as a tutor in the writing center, and he also works in a special program tutoring in classes with professors. And it seems this place is doing the same thing it did to me, in that he loves it here.
What's his name?
His name is Gabriel Levine Justicia. But he, you know, he loves the place for many of the same reasons my wife and I do. It's a real community, and he sees how it changes people's lives. And he's seen over the years how much we've enjoyed this work, all the relationships we've had with students and continue to have with students, because my wife and I keep in touch with a lot of our former students. And go to celebrations with them and all of that. So he's seen that. He's seen how much we've enjoyed it. He now enjoys it, and he talks about continuing the legacy, so to speak. So what can I say? This place is, you know, more than a workplace for me. It's, you know, it's really been my life. And the longer I've been here, the more I appreciate it. To be honest, when I first came here, you know, I'd gone to an Ivy League college, and I sort of thought, you know, I should be doing something, like, prestigious within the society. And, like, working here at Hostos seemed like, well, that wasn't so all that prestigious. Mm-hmm. But, boy, did I make the right decision. Because, well, prestige is a pretty empty thing. Enjoying the work you do is very important in one's life. And I didn't really, you know, over time I began to enjoy it more and more. And I think I got better and better at what I do, to the point where, you know, it's just a great feeling to come here each day. I mean, I come here usually 5 days a week, and I don't have to. I mean, I could wrangle it, so I was, you know, unfortunately, a lot of my colleagues want to come here as little as possible and try to give themselves 2-day-a-week schedules, and they're done. You know, I enjoy being among the students. I enjoy talking to them, working with them, talking with them outside of class, and I enjoy seeing them change. And because I've gotten close to a lot of students early on, I've had the pleasure of seeing them improve over time and see them at graduation and then see them go on to do great things. I have so many students who have gone on to do amazing things. I mean, I have students who have ESL students, former ESL students, who have PhDs. A lot of them have master's degrees. They speak English today like native speakers. I mean, just the other day I ran into a former student right walking across the concourse. I had her about 6 years ago as a student. She works as an interpreter at Lincoln Hospital. She interprets for patients who don't speak English. You know, she works with the doctors and nurses. Her English is amazing. She speaks like a native speaker, and she loves her work. She understands how important it is to be doing what she's doing. So, you know, when she says she's very grateful to me for what I and the program she was in, what we were able to do for her. That's also, you know, the students here are unusual in that, you know, they're very appreciative of your efforts. They don't take your efforts for granted, and it's really nice to be appreciated for the work that you do. So, you know, there's not a day that goes by where I don't see former students who thanked me for what I did. And it's a joy to see, you know, the students moving on, getting close. They, you know, they come up to me. I'm getting ready to graduate. I'm going here. I'm going there. To see that, to have been part of that, I mean, I don't know. You can't ask for more than that. When I first came, that first class in 1977, there were a lot of new Eurekans in that class. Some people who had recently come from Puerto Rico, and quite a few Dominicans. Most, if I recall, all of them were native speakers of Spanish. In the 70s and 80s, there was, and particularly in the 80s, there was a huge wave of Dominican immigration, so most of the students were Dominican. Over time, though, there have, you know, there have been different groups coming at different times. There was a period where we had a number of Russians come, Chinese students. Of late, there's been quite an influx of West Africans, most of them French-speaking. Quite a few students now from Bangladesh. I think it's a little more diverse than it used to be, and I welcome that because that's great for students, not only to not have the same language to fall back on when they're trying to learn English, but they also have the opportunity to learn about each other's cultures, and that's very exciting. That's probably been one of the major changes I've observed here. There are many others, but that's one of them.
And what do you teach in the class? I hear you go really deep into U.S. history.
Yeah, I used to. What I'm doing now, we have a new curriculum which I'm using with my ESL students, but as I said, this will be my last semester working with that population for the most part. I've been part of an effort here to create a first-year seminar, which is for first-year students, and it's a terrific new course. I love the curriculum. It teaches various aspects or exposes students to various aspects of New York, the history of the city, the importance of immigration, the building of the city, arts and culture, at the same time using this subject matter to help prepare them to do college-level work. So it's a fun course to teach. I enjoy working with the native speakers. You know, I did that some in the past, but now I'm doing much more of that. That's also, it's a nice change of pace for me. You know, some of the students have come here as immigrants, but most of them are born and raised in New York. But I really enjoy the curriculum that because I love New York, and it's been an opportunity for me to learn more about the city. That's a fun part of teaching the course. The more I learn, the more I see I don't know, and it's like even when I retire, hopefully, you know, I will continue to learn more about the rich history of the city. But that's one of the things I enjoy most, and students enjoy the curriculum a lot too, I think, because they realize how little they know about the city. And I didn't know this. I didn't know the park was built then, and that they, you know, people were evicted, an African American community had to be evicted to build the park. I didn't know that it was used primarily for the rich when it first opened. So many things. I mean, from the building of the first subway and the Brooklyn Bridge, and how all these things have transformed the city, and that these things are going on all around us today. The city is in a constant state of change and evolution. And to appreciate it, it's important, I think, to have this historical perspective. So it's fun to teach that and share that with students.
Are you from New York?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's ironic. I was born here in the South Bronx, but I don't consider myself a native New Yorker, truly. I mean, my grandparents all came as immigrants from Eastern Europe. That's probably another important connection for me. You know, having had known three of my four grandparents and known that they came here and had to learn English and So in a way, it's like I see my grandparents and my students in a certain way, and I like the whole idea of, you know, being there to help people make that difficult transition from coming from another country to try and, you know, live and educate themselves and work here and raise families. I mean, that's basically what my grandparents did. My parents, my father was born in Brooklyn, my mother here in the Bronx, and they got married after World War II. And I was born in the Bronx in 1950, but my parents lived together with my mother's mother in a one-bedroom apartment. So you can imagine what that must have been like for my parents. And then my brother came along in 1953. So in 1954, we left the Bronx and moved across the river to New Jersey. But we had lots of relatives here in the city. So over the years, you know, New York was sort of like a backyard. In fact, my father, I used to be bored in the suburbs when I was, you know, 11, 12. My father would give me a dollar and say, look, just go into the city and walk around, just explore. You know, and with a dollar, actually, you could make a round trip from Jersey to New York. So I grew up next to the city, and then I went away to high school, went away to college. But as I said, I came back in 1975 to do that master's program, and I haven't left. I love the city much more now than ever, and I appreciate it more than I ever have. And my wife, who's from Puerto Rico, came here at age 30. She will not leave the city. I mean, you could offer her a palace anywhere else in the world. She wouldn't go. This is her home. She wants to die here and then have her body taken back to Puerto Rico, but this is her home. And my son, he loves the city too. He can't, like, I mean, he's traveled a fair amount, but he said, there's no place like this. We're New Yorkers. The Bronx clearly is changing today. You see the signs all around us. Mm-hmm. The school, I think the school has been a really important place. It's a kind of a mecca. I mean, what I love about it is that it provides opportunity. It provides access to a population that normally, you know, traditionally might not have that access. Certainly, you know, my grandparents didn't. These are different times. I mean, you can't come here uneducated and get a decent job. I mean, today you need a college education to get a good profession and have the wherewithal to raise a family. So, you know, people need to come to college. People need to prepare themselves. And also has provided that. I think it's gotten better and better over time in doing that. Well, the challenges here at Hostos, I mean, certainly at the beginning, the facilities were certainly very subpar. It was almost like a third world country. The resources were not allocated to this place. There was never enough space. We didn't have any of the amenities that a typical college campus has. And by that, I mean, you know, there was no bookstore. There was no cafeteria. There was no gym. There was no theater. I mean, everything had to be improvised. And, you know, and people did it. I mean, people took a room and called it a gym and conducted classes there in physical fitness. But it certainly, you know, wasn't what most college students expect and have when they go to college. But I think for the most part, you know, we're still short on space, especially with a lot of the construction that's going on, renovations, classrooms have been taken offline. But compared to where we started, I mean, it's come a long way. One of the things I regret in a way, I mean, all the new faculty, and when I say new faculty, people who've been here only 20 years. For me, they're the new kids on the block, so to speak. But, you know, they have no recollection. They weren't here. They weren't here when the college was really struggling to survive, I mean, and to provide basic services to students. The place has come a long way. since then. But, you know, it's kind of fun now to be here as somebody who was there, you know, close to the beginning, to see how far it's come, to see all the amenities that we now have, that we take for granted, and that new people coming here take for granted. You know, it was always like this. No, it wasn't always like this. But to have survived those years, because the college certainly in the 70s was always under threat, because, you know, there was always concern that the college would be closed, that there was no support for the institution. And, you know, today I think the college has established itself as a really good place for students to come. I don't think that was always the case. It was always suspect for a variety of reasons. So it's overcome those initial challenges, I think. Today, well, I'm concerned a little bit about, you know, who the teachers are here and why they come here now. I think it's, you know, I think at the beginning when this place first opened, and certainly for the first at least decade or two, people were here. There was a mission, you know. There was a mission to serve this particular population, which, you know, in many cases, students were underprepared. They really weren't ready to do college-level work. They needed the kind of brushing up and polishing and support to bring themselves up to doing college-level work. So I think a lot of people today come here, you know, it's a profession. This is just a place to get a good job teaching at the college level. And there's a little bit of a resentment that they have to work with students who are not prepared. See, those of us who came at the beginning, we recognized that was our population. It was our job to serve them and do the best we could by them. I think today there's a little bit of a conflict. I sense it between the folks who came from previous generations and the new people that are coming. I don't think they're so in tune with the mission of the college. I think they like to see themselves as college professors in a more traditional sense, and don't, you know, the challenge of working here, and for me it's been the beauty, the challenge for me as a teacher is to take students wherever they are, not start where we want them to be. That's the job, to take them where they are and to take them where they need to be, and all the hard work that goes into that. And as a teacher, you know, you have to be creative, you have to be dynamic, you have to be supportive, and you have to be willing to give of yourself. It's not, you know, you just walk in and you leave. I think that's one of the challenges the college faces, as I, you know, unless it attracts a completely different population. I'm concerned about the new faculty who are here, whether they're in tune with the type of student that we serve.
You have like a really big sense of humanity, or for humanity.
Well, you know,
you're not condescending, and that comes across, you know.
I think that's what one of my strengths. I'm not condescending toward the students. I try to challenge them as best I can. I'm aware that they come with certain deficiencies or gaps in their knowledge and their experience, but that's part of my job, to help fill them in, not to, you know, treat them as, you know, they don't belong here in the first place. You know, one of the essays I use with students quite a bit is an essay called "Schooling Is Not Education," and one of the statements in the essay is, "Awareness of ignorance is the beginning of wisdom." You know, you have to become aware that there are things you don't know, and then hopefully that motivates you to want to learn about them. But it's also, you know, you give students a little bit of information or knowledge, and that stimulates their curiosity, I find, and then they want to learn more. And then once you've accomplished that, once they feel that way, well, then the road is open. Then they can pursue these areas of interest on their own. But they need certain skills and discipline to be able to go out and read and evaluate what they're reading, and, you know, find good documentaries and good programs that enhance their knowledge. But once you, once you start that journey, it's a journey that never ends. And that's kind of what I like to tell students. You know, this is not your education. This is just the start of a journey. And I'm still on it, and I hope, you know, you will be too. You will see that's your life's work. That's not to say, you know, you shouldn't get a job and make money, but, you know, we talk a lot about the meaning of life and why we're here, and because it's also part of the curriculum in this program I teach, you know, where do we come from? Why are we here? Dealing with the big questions of life. And they're, you know, so they're interested in that. One of the things in the new curriculum on New York, we learned about the integration of Major League Baseball by Jackie Robinson in 1947. And there's a quotation they learn about in this PowerPoint presentation we have. Jackie Robinson said, "A life is not important except in the impact it has on other lives." And so, you know, if we want to talk about humanity and care, you know, we have a responsibility to give to others. Because if you're just living your life for yourself and your family and those close around you, I think you're living a limited and limiting life. Where did I get this sort of interest or need to help others? I mean, I think I was fortunate to go away to a Quaker boarding school where that was the ethos, you know, there's a concern for others and giving to others and helping others less fortunate than you. I also grew up in the 1960s. Was very impressionable where, you know, it's important to make a difference in the world and other people's lives. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything, but, you know, I think, being here has really given me that pleasure, that joy. It's very motivating. It's very motivating. It's kind of hard to imagine not being here. I realize at some point I'll move on, but, you know, I'm 66. I feel very young, very energetic, and I still enjoy what I'm doing. I think what I won't miss, I don't think, is the correcting of students' papers. That's labor-intensive. It can be a little boring at times. But even that can be joyful. When you see students who move from a horrible first draft to a beautiful third draft, which I just saw today. You know, oh my God, I was about to give back this composition to a student. She wasn't at the previous class. And it was like, wow, what a change. And then you would see students from the beginning of the semester, they can barely express themselves in English, in written English. And then at the end, they're writing fluently and powerfully. Finding a voice in a second language, that's an amazing thing. So, you know, to bear witness to that, it never ceases to amaze me. So it's a great thing. Yeah, I would say what's also, for me personally, I've had a lot of freedom to teach what I want, how I want, with whom I want. I don't think everybody else has had that. I mean, I've been allowed to create the curriculum for my own courses. I've been allowed, for the most part, to choose the people that I work with closely. And so that makes a big difference because it's what, you know, I think I choose people who care about students and are interested in rolling up their sleeves and giving of themselves to help students. I mean, that's key for me. I mean, you know, if that's not their main purpose for being here, I tend to, not associate with them. So I've over the years, I've been able to work with a lot of terrific people. And this place has attracted a lot of bright, caring individuals who want to do well by our students. That's you know, there's always been politics here. This place was once, you know, highly political, particularly over the issue of bilingual education and what the role of the institution was. Some people feel we've lost our way in that sense, that we're not fulfilling the original bilingual mission of the college. It, you know, bilingualism here is certainly not what it used to be. But it was always a bit, for me at least, problematic. But, you know, it's still a place where you can come and learn and change your life and meet people who want to help you. And, you know, ultimately that's what it's all about. It doesn't matter where you go, as long as you're open to others and to working with others. I mean, and that's also sort of the... I try to... What's special about Ossos, I think, is the community atmosphere. People feel like they're in a true community and even a family. I mean, people feel very comfortable. People will tell you that all the time. People who work here feel they're part of a community, and for the most part. And people who study here, they may not... They don't always appreciate it while they're here. If they go to another college, whoa, they really see the difference. They see how when you go to offices, for the most part, people try to help you here. They don't just give you a cold shoulder or blow you off. Most teachers were willing to help you and give you extra time. It's not that they don't do that in other places, but other institutions tend to be bigger, a little more impersonal here. I mean, my son says that all the time. He feels like he's among family when he's here. So that's a great aspect of the institution, that it builds community and it offers the opportunity to join a community if you're so disposed. You have to be honest with students. You know, you have to, if they're producing work that is just not going to be acceptable, I mean, you have to let them know that they have to do better than this.
Sure, sure.
But this is where you are now. This is not where you will be.
Right, right.
But I tell them all the time, you know, it's hard. It's not easy. You know, but they, you know, I show them films. I talk about former students. They meet some former students who come in and talk about their experiences, which motivate them. Like, you know, yeah, I was here. It's important to let students know that what they're doing is hard, right? But that it's very possible that other people, you know, they're part of this chain. I mean, lots of people have come before in the same circumstances, some of them even more difficult, and have achieved wonderful things. And, you know, this is what it takes. It's not easy. There'll be moments where you want to cry, where you want to quit. But, you know, never give up. And, you know, and they see movies where that's an element, and we read stories, and, you know, people see that this is what it takes. And, of course, when you see people who've been in your exact same situation come back and say, yeah, it was horrible. Yes, I suffered. Yes, I made sacrifices. But I'm here to tell you, you can do it. I mean, just this morning, I told the story of a student, because some of them say, oh, I have to work, and I have so much on my plate, and it's so difficult. And I say, I want to tell you about a student I had a few years back. She was a full-time student here at 3:15 in the afternoon. She left her last class every day, Monday through Thursday, and went downtown to 42nd Street, where she worked in a hotel. And then, starting at 4 o'clock, she had to clean 45 hotel rooms. And then go home. She was the mother of two kids. Her husband put the kids to bed, so during the week she almost never saw her children, except maybe in the morning. She went home. She had her dinner. She took a shower. And then she started her homework. And she'd stay up to 3-4 in the morning, whatever it took to complete the homework for the next day. And I told the students, and I hated to see her. I hated to see her every day. And the students like looked, were like, why would you say, and I said, why would I say that? And one student said, because she always looked tired. And I said, yes. Every time I saw her, she was like her eyes, she could barely keep her eyes open. But she did every assignment. She never missed an assignment, and she would even do the extra credit assignments. So, and at the end of the semester, she passed the reading test and the writing test and went on her way. So, look at the sacrifices she made, the work she put in each day. That, I mean, I said, I couldn't do that myself personally, but she did it. And, you know, she's an example to all of us of what we can achieve when we really want something. So some of the students, you know, was like, well, I just have a little part-time job after school. I'm not cleaning 45 hotel rooms. So our students are amazing. And they give examples in this, to each other and inspire each other. It's a beautiful thing. So that's all I have to say. Everything's good.